Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. My goodness gracious me, we're back. Is anybody out there? I can't forgive anyone who isn't, because we've literally been the worst friends to you in the last 2 years at the time you needed us most.
Just imagine we're here. How long they've been waiting. The anticipation is thick.
We were just chatting and we don't even know how long it's been since we last did a podcast, and we're so lazy that we won't even open our own podcast to see how long it's been. That's how dreadful we are. But I am Howell, this is Jamie.
Hey.
And this is Matthew Wandless.
Hello again.
Once again, we're all down the Zoom in different places in the country, and on a beautiful October day, and I thought we'd just have a quick catch-up. A lot has happened since we last spoke. I broke my leg and had a long summer. It was the day, in fact, that Boris Johnson, Freedom Day, the day that everything was due to open up, that was the day that I broke my leg and ankle. In five
Wow, that
places.
Is appalling timing.
Yep. And it was kind of karma, because I'd enjoyed lockdown so much. I found it liberating. And then this was like, okay, well, here you go. Have lockdown, but without the ability to move as far as the fridge and do that for 8 weeks. And it was one of the bleakest periods of my existence. It was horrendous. But now I'm just on a nice 18-month road to recovery now. I can move around, walking like a penguin. And that was quite an experience. Anyone here ever broken anything before?
I've never broken anything, which I think puts me in a minority. Oh, James is in there as well. We're in the minority.
Never broken anything.
I hadn't before this. I hadn't. And the actual pain of doing it isn't that bad. I would choose it over, like, burning my hand.
Yeah, but you were drunk, weren't you, when you did it?
That is true. I was.
Go on, quickly. How did you do it?
Well, I marched into a
room, bag.
Slipped on the edge of a beanbag or a Muppets vinyl album, possibly the two of those combined, and just simply twisted and skidded and just felt this crunch from my knee down, and just yelped. You know, in that specific moment, it really is incredibly painful. And then I cleaned the house, because in doing so, I also knocked over a plant pot, smashed my phone, smashed a mirror. And I spent 2 hours cleaning all that up. Because
with the leg?
Yeah, because despite...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, even when you're married, even if you've broken your leg and ankle in five places, you do not want your wife to wake up to soil all over the...
Was she asleep upstairs?
She'd gone to bed. Yeah. It was horrendous. And you don't really know. You don't know for sure that you've broken something. You just kind of...
I think you do when you try and walk.
Yeah, so were you walking on it?
No, I kind of was. I was trying to, but it was...
Oh, my God.
I couldn't put any weight on it.
Oh, this is making the back of my legs go funny.
Yeah.
My wife, when I'm sorry, we're going on a long tangent here. We've only got a short time. But my wife broke her ankle the first Christmas after our daughter was born. Uh-huh. We were at my uncle's place, and I had been sleeping downstairs because I was drunk.
Yes.
And she came to get me at about 5 a.m, missed the last step on the stairs, and I sort of heard her calling out for me. Yeah. And I was like, oh, come on, what the hell? Like, I didn't think anything serious could have happened, but my aunt, who is a doctor, was in the house as well.
Right.
And when Hannah tried to step on it, she fainted. Oh. She passed out.
Oh, my God.
At that point, I panicked and went and grabbed Soraya, and she immediately was like, yeah, I think that's broken.
Yeah. And do you know what? There's nobody in the fracture clinic, which is a hilarious place to go to, by the way, but there is no patient in the fracture clinic that has a more rock and roll story than Hannah and I. Like, it's everybody's done it, like carrying a towel, yes, or letting slipping on this on the corner of a stair or a beanbag, or nobody there is it's like Bruce Lee has done it.
Yeah, no one's in a street fight. Yeah. Taking out three guys with one kick, and which then breaks their shin.
And yeah, that's bad, but it's a bad moment. But the horrendousness is the recovery. It's just so boring and long and
sucked.
Oh, it's awful. Awful. Anyway, so that happened. But and prior to that, I wrote a book. So I've actually published a book, which, you know, if you want to support this podcast in any way, please buy my book. It is a seemingly boring subject, but it's something I'm very passionate about, took me a long time to write. And it's about, if you are a manager of any kind in your job, if you're a manager, it's about...
I am.
You are. It's about lifting the lid on hyper creative places, like places that you would consider very, very creative, radio, film, TV, that kind of thing. Lifting the lid on those brains and saying what you are potentially doing wrong when it comes to enabling innovation, new ideas, creativity in more traditional workplaces. And I think it's a very good book. And so I would love people to read it, but I'm also the worst person at marketing of all time. So I've done nothing to tell people about it. I've done like a Facebook post or something.
Cool. I'll check that out.
Ah, thank you. So what have we been watching? Like, you know, we've only got time to, we just want to say hello and try and get these podcasts going a bit more. But I do just want to say this to any listeners who are still with us. You don't get many emails on a podcast. It's just people listen and people do the podcast, and there tends not to be a great deal of communication, especially if you're as crap at marketing as we are. But if when you do emails, it's lovely, and it's enough to spur us to do another podcast. Quite often the reason we do a podcast is somebody says to me, oh, I miss listening to you guys. When are you going to do another Box Set Pod? And I am always amazed that anybody is listening. So if you do want to get in touch with us, please do. It's lovely to get your email. studio@theboxsetpod.com is the email. And in fact, if that doesn't work, there's an even more kind of Gmail-y version of that, I think, which is boxsetpodcast@gmail.com. No the, just boxsetpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to send us an email. What have we been watching? What's been the highlight of the last 6 months for you two?
Well, I think should we start with Squid Games, because...
Yeah, and I always call it Squid Games as well, but it's not. It's Squid Game.
Squid Game?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Because there are a number of games in it, but there is only one Squid Game. That makes sense.
There's only one Squid.
What a brilliant series. Just brilliant. Anyone disagree?
No. I would say that, like, it surprised me how gruesome it was. Like, let's just, because there might be people out there who haven't watched it. This is a kind of, is it even dystopian? It might be more realistic to the way life is in South Korea than we realise, that there is a lot of people in debt in South Korea.
Oh, right.
Not the game.
To South Korea.
No, but it's a real problem in South Korea. That's one of the things that's kind of come out of this documentary, is it's really sort of looked into this topic in South Korea especially. But obviously these people who are in a hell of a lot of debt get offered to take part in a game. They don't realise at the time that they're all children's games. They're all given a number. They're all taken to a secret island. And there they take part in deadly children's games, six of which, and if you get to the finish, you get a lot of, I don't even know what the currency is, and I don't even know how much money it is.
One.
Korean one. And I did look it up, because actually...
I tried to convert it, but I struggled still. I don't know why.
It's about, I think it was about 24 million sterling.
Right.
Well, that's if I recall, I can't remember. I did look at, no, it was about 30 million sterling. Okay. But no, that confused my wife because they didn't capitalize the word one on the subtitles and she didn't know what the currency was. And so she was like, why do they keep writing one?
Well, we can talk a bit about the subtitles as well, because that's one of the other bugbears.
This is like the ultimate storm in a teacup for me, because I was like, I want to watch this show, and I quickly Googled, should I watch it with dubbed or subtitles? And it was because I'd seen a tweet or something about it that I asked the question, because normally it wouldn't be a question. I would never watch it with dubbing.
Somebody was saying that it's lost in translation a bit, that some of the nuances have been lost in the translation.
That was the article I saw saying, oh, this is what you'll miss if you watch Squid Game with subtitles. Obviously, I didn't read the article because I didn't want to know what happened.
Yeah.
But I couldn't face the idea of watching it dubbed, so we watched it with subtitles. And then afterwards, I went and looked at the article. Anyone who's worried about watching in subtitles, it doesn't matter one jot. Like the subtle differences are so subtle that it's like, you might miss a certain thing that they're implying about a certain character, but it certainly isn't going to change your reading of the show.
No.
So don't worry about it. It's bollocks.
I agree completely. And
clickbait nonsense.
And yeah, absolute nonsense. And I didn't think they were that bad at all, the subtitles. And in fact, the style of Squid Game is what I found so appealing. Is you can start watching it, and it's almost acted very broadly. It's like it's quite a broad, particularly by the main character, the two guys at the very beginning, the first sequence that you'll see, it seems to be, it's quite broad, it's quite heightened, it's almost like farce. There's a sort of comic farce level to their performance, but it's done inside a drama and inside some serious stuff, which is kind of quite similar to I don't know whether it's the way that we in the West perceive things from the East because of subtitles, or whether there's just a larger style to traditional acting over there. That there's a kind of a strange thing at first that you go, oh, is this kind of rubbish? Is this kind of a soap opera thing? Because it feels broad in the way soap operas are. But it's not. That's one of the things I loved about it, was that they were, I think, he particularly is clearly a really good comic performer and really good physical performer. And it's part of that style that keeps that balance between the game and the drama, which in all of these things, from Running Man to Hunger Games, you know, all of these types of kind of death game things, that's what you need. You need an element of playfulness to the actual style that can counteract the depth of the horror and the misery.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, I think, what keeps it rattling along. And so the subtitles sort of, if they were at all a bit broad, it doesn't matter. It gives you time to concentrate on the plot and look at the screen. I don't know. I don't know what they thought we were missing, but it just gets 10 squids out of 10 for me. I mean,
I didn't know if I'd quite give it 10 out of 10. I really enjoyed it.
Go on. What would you remove some squids for?
Well, I can't really talk about it because I don't want to spoil it. But I found, I think it was a show that was very difficult to end, but I don't think that excuses when an ending is a little bit unsatisfying.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
I found the last two episodes to be the weakest of the nine.
Okay. Let's say that a story were to end with somebody deciding to get on a boat or not, right? Let's use that as a metaphor. Certainly in our living room, one of us was very angry that that person didn't get on the boat, and one of us thought that that was credible and justified a second season. Is that partly what you're talking about?
No, it went further than that. Like I feel, I mean, obviously. Yeah, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that the ending points towards the idea of a second series, but because that's always going to happen in TV being what it is these days.
Yeah.
But I felt like a lot of stuff that happened in it was just kind of glossed over. and not in a way where I was like, oh, that this feels like it's leading on to second series. It was like, you just haven't addressed that.
Like the
and it's not even that I really care about that, because ultimately the ending of this story is kind of unimportant to me. I just think you can't avoid the fact that the ending is a little bit dissatisfying. But I love the show because I think it's different from the ones we've touched on already, like Running Man, Hunger Games, and I'd throw in Battle Royale as well, yeah. Because of the very clever setup of the games and the agency that they give the participants. Yeah. And
yes, yeah, that is
the,
yeah,
which I think just about, makes it a much more interesting thing, and also it's it shows the level of desperation that the participants are feeling, and I think all of that stuff is so solid and so well done. So it's a minor quibble, really, because I don't think it was ever going to have a particularly satisfying ending.
I was thinking maybe you could do one, a second series where you just get everyone in the game is an anti-vaxxer, apart from one person who's got coronavirus. I think that would be a good start.
I think you should start work on that series, Hal.
I will. Jamie, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I kind of agree with... I like it. It would probably get 8 or 9 squids out of 10 for me. And the reasons are similar to what Matt said. The ending, I don't like, I know we talked about this, ending a show, leaving it open for a second series. Do you actually need to leave it open? Can it not end and then you can still have a second series? We don't have to be foreshadowed into a second series. Like, they could just have ended the show and started season 2 within, well, anyway, I won't go into it because it could spoil stuff, but I get annoyed when shows do that, and they just leave a last episode that leaves you just feeling really unfulfilled by what you really wanted to get out of it. He's, you know, whatever's happened at the end of the show, you want to get more from it, and you can't because they're trying to set something else up, and it kind of it ends up just compromising that final part of a really good show. So it's not a massive thing, but I was angry. I was like shouting at the TV. I was like you said when the option was there to do one of two things.
Yeah.
And he didn't do that.
Yeah.
That annoyed me.
Well, I was the one who didn't mind that. I kind of disagree with you.
Thought you might be,
yeah. I do understand. I mean, I do get it. And I don't, it's not something I would argue over, but I do think that it does hold together. It's not a kind of something that's just lopped on. The writer took years and years writing this thing. And if you say that the thing is ultimately about debt and the control of rich over poor, and that's the battle, that's the real battle, then it all holds together for me. And I think the needle's threaded quite well. But I agree with you. Of course, I was also going, come on!
Yeah. My only other quibble is, what brings it down slightly, is that would I watch it again? And maybe you would, but I couldn't. I don't think I could go through that experience with those people again, because it's really hard. It is a hard watch. It's very broad at times in the performances, and that really helps kind of contrast against it. But
I was thinking that
there are very tough moments, and I don't know if I could go through a show like that. It's quite a traumatic at times, some of those moments, even though you know what's going to happen. I'd still find it really sort of tough to watch again, and that kind of, you know, the best shows for me you want to watch again and again.
I don't know
if I'd want to watch that again.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't think I could see myself watching it again. But just to have to deal with, I think I can't think what her name was.
She's so annoying.
I can't remember her name. I'm not going to try and remember it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think I could watch that character again for any length of time.
I felt that way about the bad guy, and there was an element of kind of a West Side Story about it was very, again, that sort of style. There was a sort of immediate group of bullies in the playground, but it was great. Anyway, listen, that Squid Game, if you've not seen it, I mean, we probably could have talked about it in detail because everyone's seen it. It's
it's one of those shows you've got to watch.
Yeah. Ted Sarandos. I went to London last weekend to watch Dave Chappelle, and the reason I mentioned that is that...
Oh, wow. What, live?
Live, yeah. There was a lot of controversy around Dave Chappelle recently, and as part of that, Ted Sarandos... we'll talk about it another time. It's too... To the issues are far too great to get into.
You have to look that up. God, carry on.
But there was a memo from Ted Sarandos who talked about Squid Game and stuff, and they've just done their quarterly review. Basically, the fact is that it's the most watched series that they've ever had in the first 4 weeks of its release. It was like, ridiculous, 200 million people have watched Squid Game. It's incredible. And especially when
that did make me think, do you think that's because it tapped into a huge Asian audience?
Yes, but you have to bear in mind that the majority of Netflix subscribers are Westerners, and that's and considering it has subtitles, that's a colossal number of people Stranger Things numbers. It's incredible.
Hasn't that happened a couple of times in lockdown though? Wasn't there another show? I can't think what it was that came out.
Bridgerton was a
one. Oh yeah, Bridgerton.
There was something else I was thinking of. I can't think what it was.
Goliath has just released its last series on Amazon. Has anybody watched that?
Loving it. It's one of the best digital. I'm halfway through and it's very good. Like, it's a show that can be, it's a bit up and down in quality, but this series has been really good.
It's so good. The first episode of this final series was directed by Billy Bob Thornton, and it pays homage to Alfred Hitchcock is an understatement. It's like Rear Window is referenced.
Not to cut you off completely, but the show I was thinking of was Tiger King.
Oh yes, Tiger King.
Oh yeah.
When that came out, it was just like you couldn't move for people talking about that.
Yeah.
Sorry. Carry on.
Do you know that was March? That was a year and a half ago that came out.
Yeah,
a little
that's crazy,
have we done since then?
Came out just at the right time when everyone was going to be watching TV.
Yeah.
I think bigger than Goliath, though, no offense.
Good pun.
Hey, is Succession Series 3 has started. Now, I haven't started it because what I'm trying to do do a big batch watch.
Yeah.
Or binge watch. I don't know what you call it. But I mean, this basically is my favorite show that has been made in the last 10 years, and I can't wait to get into it and tuck into season 3. I'm hearing good things.
It's great.
Anyway, have you started it? How are you?
Yeah. And of course it's flipping one a week, so you've got to wait for the damn thing.
Exactly.
Apple annoyingly releases stuff once a week as well. Like Morning Show is back, which I'm sitting through. There's Mr. Corman on Apple is very good as well. But one of my lockdown projects was to try and teach myself the Succession theme tune on the piano. And I've not played it since the start of lockdown. I'm just getting on my piano now.
I think we've got to, yeah.
Yes.
See if I can do it.
Hang on, no, should we close the show with this?
All right, then. We should probably close the show in a moment. Go on. What else haven't we touched on? And let's make a promise to do another podcast in the next 4 weeks.
I was just trying to think back. What the fuck have I watched? I actually can't remember.
It's hard.
Sex Education Series 3. Show continues to be really fucking smart and funny and enjoyable while doing some really good work, I think, in that area of discourse. Did you watch it?
No, I mean, I have to say, I watched the first two series. I've never been that bothered with it. I've always thought...
Have you gone off it?
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. And I like it enough to sort of say there's nothing bad against it. I've never really enjoyed it massively enough to sort of go, oh, another series is here. I might watch it at some point if I run out of stuff to watch, but it's just never really gripped me the way. And I know it's huge and it's very popular and the performances are great. And like you said, it does touch on a lot of topics that are really interesting, but I've just never got into it.
Yeah, this is a rare sort of thing for me where it's like I'm actually more interested in the show to see where it's going to go and what it's going to talk about than I am in the kind of specific narratives of the characters, which I think actually are its weakest aspect. I don't think it's that well acted, except there are some very good young actors in there. But I think for the most part, I would say that's the performances are its weakest point. But it makes up for it for me because I think it's just doing something very important. And I like particularly there was an arc in series two about one of the characters who is quite a kind of, she's portrayed as a very ditzy.
Yeah. She wouldn't, the actress won an award for that. She won a BAFTA, didn't she?
She did, and I think it was a really great arc to have this girl who could be seen as someone who would probably be a victim of slut shaming or anything like that, and probably seen as quite a loose person or whatever. I don't know what the fuck people say about people, but for her to have this kind of, again, what people would talk about as a very minor incident of sexual assault, but to show the impact of it, and then that extends into series three. I just, you know, they do it in it with a lightness of touch, which is afforded to them by the kind of heightened manner in which everything takes place. And it allows them to do it without being preachy or too dark. And I think it just works so well.
Maybe I need to get back on it. Did either of you watch Patriot on Amazon?
Yes, I did, Howell. I did.
What?
Oh, that was the one you told us to watch. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well,
what do you think?
It's good. Like the first series takes a bit to get going.
Yeah.
It does. But when you get into it, it's pretty funny. It's kind of like a Coen Brothers style. It's very deadpan.
Coen Brothers meets kind of Wes world. Anderson, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, series one, we really got into it. I really liked it. Performance is really good. The main guy. Series two starts.
Yeah.
Episode one, and it's like all logic, all like element of, you know, you can't, it just loses any thread with reality. Like things happen that you think, well, how did that happen? Because how would they get there if they didn't know that they were there? And they were, did you find that? Look,
no,
series two, and you're like, how have you got here?
No, I thought everything made sense. Maybe you missed an episode.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, have I missed an episode? There must be something. Have I missed something? I really tried to find out what is I'm missing, but.
What I completely adore about it, and it's definitely finished, you know, there's two series and I think it's done. But what I completely love about it is just the idea of if you get a guy who's smart enough, the writer said it's like film noir, you get people, characters who are smart enough to make a plan, but are not capable enough to execute the plan. That is brilliant drama and comedy as well. And this poor guy in the middle of it all, gradually more people start to try and help him as they figure out who he is and what he does and stuff. But they're too stupid to really help as well. So it's just this, like, watching a man get driven into the ground further and further. It's so good. I urge you I just adore it. And it's Michael Dorman, I think his name is, who was also in, if you've watched... For All Mankind on Apple TV, which is the alternative space race. What if Russia had got to the moon first? That's very good, and he's in that. And he's brilliant.
He's very good. He's a good. He's an interesting actor, and the performance is interesting because he's very. He's almost like it's a bit like the before. If you've seen the film Being There with Peter Sellers, where he literally he doesn't do much. Everyone just projects onto him. And it's in a similar way with his character. There's something, a blankness to him that gives him a sort of intrigue, and it allows other characters to kind of sort of bounce off him and almost like live through him. And it's very well done, and his performance is very well, like,
so good. There's a running gag throughout both series where people say, "How are you?" If anyone ever asks him how he is, his answer is pretty good, right? And he kind of does it through grit. He's just the most poker-faced guy, and there's so much going on under the surface. But he's screwed up, and he's also trying to be basically James Bond. And, you know, how are you doing? Pretty good. And it gets worse. Like basically, he can be standing there, you know, with a leg hanging off, or on the yeah. brink of death, and someone says, "How are you doing? Pretty good." And it's just, and it's that the whole series is just so understated.
You kind of marvel at it, yeah.
And it's all like, between the lines.
The fun of it is watching everything get tangled up and then see how the hell they're going to untangle this, and how is he going to get himself untangled from whatever he's in.
Yeah.
And it's really well done, really well. Yeah. So series one I really enjoyed. I was just frustrated at the start of series two, and I stopped watching it because of that.
Oh.
I'll probably go back. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't think I'm going to be able to play this. I think that what I thought was a year after I taught myself a really hard theme tune that I could just sit down and play it again. So it's going to sound awful.
Give it a go.
I can't. I've not even got my pedal.
You know what? As well, it's getting caught in the gate from Zoom, I think.
Yeah.
Damn.
It up.
Record it for yourself after this, and then stitch it on to the end.
That'll do.
One more try. Hang on, drop the mic. Okay. Go.
Oh, so close. Very good.
Once round.
Good. Fantastic.
Yeah, that was the first 2 months of lockdown there.
Best TV theme tune ever?
I think it's that. I think it's that. That or the raccoons, obviously.
That is great. Yeah.
Can I quickly, before we go, because we've got 7 minutes left on Zoom, have you guys watched any of the Marvel series?
Which Marvel series is this?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't think we've talked about WandaVision, Loki, Captain America, and the Winter Soldier, or What If. So they're all up for grabs.
Loki, I've watched maybe two or three of that so far.
Yeah. I watched all of WandaVision, watched a few of Loki. I just think it's a lot of explaining. Oh, just a lot of bloody explaining. But WandaVision, I thought, no other series in the world could get away with being this boring for two episodes. And then...
It was audacious, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was dangerous, but people stuck with it. I mean, it just shows how far an audience will go. Who you think have massive like attention deficit disorder, and you've got to have a fight sequence every 12 seconds in those films. How far that audience will go once they're committed to it. Because it really was a 1950s sitcom for two episodes. Which wasn't very funny. You just you're literally hanging people for 2 hours on what's going on. But yeah, we should return to that as well.
Did either of you watch What If?
No.
Because that's the best one.
What exactly is that about then? I've never really given it a look yet.
The premise of that one is it's like an exploration of the multiverse. So it showed the first 8 episodes, I think, if they were 10, are just little kind of alternative universe takes on characters we already know. So the first episode is, what if instead of Steve Rogers going into the Super Soldier program, what if it was Peggy Carter? And they play that out for half an hour and show you how it changes the future and how it doesn't. And then there's one like, what if T'Challa was kidnapped instead of Peter Quill and became the leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy?
Wow.
And the changes are sometimes subtle and sometimes very far reaching. But then by the end of it, they've spun a narrative that kind of runs over the whole thing. And there's this character who's played by Jeffrey Wright called the Watcher, who is, I don't know how much of a background you guys have in comics, but the Watcher has sort of turned up at various times in Marvel. And it's the kind of this all-powerful being from this race of all-powerful beings that just observe the universe or the multiverse, and they don't get involved. And then his character sort of starts to develop a bit more as the series begins to change and shift. But there are just some really fascinating ideas in there. And the way it all comes together, I think it's definitely the best one they've done, I'd say. But if we're going to rank them, Captain America is by far the worst. Then WandaVision and Loki both had good things about them, but also bad things. And then What If I thought was great, and everyone should watch that.
And of course, above that even is The Mandalorian.
Oh, yes.
That's not Marvel, but yeah.
Oh, sorry,
Mandalorian, yeah. We've talked about it in the past. Mandalorian was an absolute triumph. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Great.
Thanks. I repeat, you can email us. Always nice to hear from you. If you want to support this podcast, please buy my book, and that will support 1/3 of the people on this podcast. The email address is boxsetpodcast@gmail.com, and the link to my book is in the description of this podcast. So,
what's it called, though, just in case?
It's called Managers Managing Magic, Enabling Creative Innovation.
That's a semicolon. An alliteration to sell a book.
That's right. It doesn't. It's impossible to sell a damn book. I mean, it's just... But it started off as a bit of a biography, but I ditched all that. There were a lot of Jamie stories in there, and there's barely none now.
Yeah. Oh.
We'll have to return to that.
Deadwood.
Yeah, you could get rid of the chaff. Right. Thank you all. Thanks for listening. And we three shall speak again.
Nice to talk to you guys.
Nice to talk to you. Goodbye.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.